Could you do me a big favor? You
You
know,
want a favor from me?
yeah, it's a small one. And here's what it is. If you could, I just feel very uncomfortable doing the shout out for my own report, my spring training report. I know it's up there, you can see it, but I'd like you to mention it because I'd like to be maintain my modesty as a podcasting personality. So would you mind doing that, please? And
Wow.
if we want to say it's wonderful, you can do that too. Okay.
Okay, I will help you with your deception.
Okay, let's make it happen then. Man, what the
Okay.
heck? Got fever, I got shakes, half alive and half awake. I'm old, I've been told, it's another episode. Werewolf, I'm having me an episode, a pro show episode.
Well, all right, it happened, you're here. This is the
Hey,
Bro
hey.
Show. Yeah, it's Saturday morning. It's the Bro Show. We do it every week. And my name is Jerry.
And my name is John.
Yeah, we are actual brothers. Yeah,
Mm.
wow. How exciting. We've been doing this for a while. We talk about
Yep.
four things, and they're all worthy of note and comment. But before
Yes.
we get into that, John, you have undertaken your usual spring literary masterpiece known as John's 2024 Spring Training Report.
Well, you didn't have to mention it, but since you
You know,
did, I
John,
really appreciate it.
I had the honor, and I mean honor, of working on this with you as your layout man.
Yes, hey, listen, you actually should be getting some credit on the report.
No,
Like,
I wasn't saying it for that. I was saying I'm very familiar with the content.
okay.
I read and looked at every word to make sure it got formatted properly. I looked for any outs, you know, obvious errors and stuff. You
Right.
presented a really great manuscript, and I'm glad we got it out there. We got a link to it in the show notes. If you love baseball, you will love this report. Make sure you hit the link and enjoy it, and give it to your friends too. They
Yeah,
need to see this. They,
just
you know,
kind
you
of forward
can get
it.
a jump. You can get a jump on the baseball season, right? You can
Right.
get a head start.
Yeah. There are some
That's what
things in
this
that
is.
report that have
Yeah.
already, I've kind of somewhat predicted or said, watch out for, that have already happened in the first week of the season. So it's pretty good.
Well, you're proving my point right there. Okay, well,
yeah.
thank you for your hard work on that, John.
Okay, and I appreciate your help.
Hey, you know what? We've got a full moon coming up, John, and I think it's time to start, you know, paying attention. 17 and a half days. It'll be on
Yeah.
April the 23rd. That's the next full moon, you know. Yeah, there's a half day there, you know. So, yeah, I'd say you don't need to be too paranoid or anything like that, but if you've got plans in 17 and a half days, make sure you're going to be in at night. You don't want to be roaming around, that's for sure. Right?
Yeah, you know, the reason I think it's important for us to emphasize this is because a lot of people are thinking about things like, you know, that aren't quite as important, like the eclipse, the total eclipse of the,
Wow.
so we need to remind them about this fact, you know, because
Yeah,
it's important.
right. Yeah, it is important. I mean, eclipses are nice and all that good stuff, but hey, be careful out there. Be careful.
The eclipses are normally not life-threatening. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to do something stupid like stare at the sun and maybe get a little blind, you know,
Yeah.
impair your vision. But that's different.
Yeah, this is different. I agree. Hey, and you know what? If out there, if you're new and you just hearing us, you accidentally ended up here by some fluke, you can subscribe. You can go to bro.show or www.bro.show, and the subscribe button's all over the place. Just subscribe. It's free. You'll get notified once a week that there's a show. And you have a link to it if you want to listen to it, or you know, all kinds of good stuff. Completely with show notes, photo bomb, 20, 25 minutes of excellent audio. You're all set. We even have our own song,
Hey.
John, as we just heard, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah, we
Hey,
wrote it and all that good stuff.
Hey, do you
I'm
have a
sorry?
shirt on? Do you have a shirt on? Are you wearing something above,
you know, above the belt? Yeah, I am wearing something above the waist. I won't comment about what's below the waist at this time. But I'm wearing a t-shirt that it features the season of the meerkat.
Oh, nice. Yeah. One of those are good.
Yeah. Yeah, great t-shirt.
Great t-shirt. Well, I am wearing... Well, I'm wearing the long sleeve season of the werewolf. I've actually last night slept with my werewolf coffee knit cap on because I want to have werewolf on the brain when I do the show.
That's a good idea. That's a real good idea.
So that's what I'm wearing.
I like that. That's good. And, you know, werewolves are animals of a sort, and I think maybe we need to talk about our sponsor, the Animal Legal Defense.
Hey, yes. Very good. The Animal Legal Defense Fund, that's our sponsor. Their mission is to protect the lives and advance the interests of animals through the legal system. They do it a variety of ways. And I think one of the things, you know, the lawyers do is they have the high impact lawsuits to protect the animals from harm. I think that's, you know, one of their best ones. So let's leave it at that. And then also, I forget to mention swag.
Oh, you said that real loud. Yeah, they got swag. They got great t-shirts. We got links at the bottom of the show notes, and you can click on one of those to get a t-shirt. Also, or donate or get involved in the organization. And a little farther down, we got links to our own swag, and proceeds from our swag go to the Animal Legal Defense Fund. You can get werewolf t-shirt, a werewolf mug. We got some of the older stuff, the meerkat t-shirts, like the one I'm wearing. Go there, have some fun, get yourself some swag, help out the animals.
Hey, hey.
We have a werewolf story, John.
We sure do, and I'll just mention, as and you can carry on with most of this. The fact is, this is a series of animal stories we're doing on the Wolfman, and we started a couple weeks ago talking about various parts, but we decided to move on with respect to the Wolfman and talk about the second movie, which features the Wolfman, and it's one of the big ones. It's the old clash between Frankenstein and the Wolfman. It's called Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. It came out in 1943. And this has got a lot of interesting facts, trivia, interesting stories. And I think that one of the best ones you might want to talk about is this whole story about is a continuation with the screenwriter. Kurt, and
maybe you
can kind of give us a little bit of the background as to how he all got involved and maybe some of the incentives he might have had to do with this screenplay.
Jesus, you teed that ball up perfectly, my friend. Okay, yeah, good old Kurt Siodmak. Yeah, you know, I want to say Siodmak. I figured that would be better, but no, it's Siodmak. That's his name, Kurt. He wrote The Wolfman. And which is, you know, like a history-making story,
right.
Where he took what he learned from the beginnings of World War II in Germany as a refugee, as a Jew escaping Nazi Germany. What he saw and what he felt and what he learned, he put it into the Wolfman, including a star that marked the Wolfman so people could tell. He's a Wolfman. He's a werewolf. You know, that kind of thing. And how crazy ordinary people got in their fear of the Wolfman. Of course, it was justified. He'd ripped their throat out. So, yeah.
So what does he do with this one?
Well, what he did with this one was, this is a great story. He, the movie producers needed a screenwriter, right? A script writer. And Kurt Siodmak needed a new car. What do you think?
So Kurt says, I am your man, and by the way, I need a car to get there in order to do the screenplay. Get the idea.
Yeah, and the guy who was looking over the signing said, buy your car. If you sign this within 2 hours, we got a deal. So he had a car to his head, or a gun to his head.
Right.
Wolf to his throat. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact is that it's a continuation of the story, and he's got he knows some of the players that are going to be there, but it does turn out to be a good full plot that makes sense, and maybe some people say, well, the ending might be a little bit rushed, but he did a good job.
Oh, I thought it was, I really enjoyed it. Mary Jane and I watched this night before last. You watched it last night.
Yeah.
You know, it's a black and white movie, which some people have a little difficulty with. You and I think, really like black and white movies, so
Oh,
we didn't
yeah.
have a problem. Mary Jane liked it a lot, too. The thing that struck me, and I think it struck you, too, was the music, the use of dramatic music. You know, now these days, there's a lot of music in films, and, you know, it's used to reinforce the plot. Sometimes it's used to save on lines being spoken and all kinds of stuff. But with this, it's always used to reinforce an emotion. And
Right.
they start even the titles to the film out. They started out right away with this super scary music. It's not like eerie. It's
No.
frightening. It's frightening. It's, whoa.
But
and
it gets you in the
really
right mood.
Good.
Yeah, it gets
Oh.
you in the right mood. And they continue with the atmosphere, with the fog and the darkness,
Oh, yeah.
a little darkness.
Oh.
It's murky, I would call it. So, hey,
Yeah.
here's another thing I think it's worth. In when you say Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, you would think that Frankenstein would be getting the higher billing, and we're supposed to be talking about the Wolfman. But guess what? Who really is the star? Is the Wolfman the star, or
Oh,
is
by
Frankenstein?
far. The Wolfman is, but not only is he the star, but I mean, the original title was The Wolfman Meets Frankenstein.
Ah.
Got changed. So
Right.
there's that. Not many people know that. That's the way that was. And, you know, this was based on the success of The Wolfman, no doubt. And, you know, you'll notice that the production values are just a smidge higher. It's
Right.
nice. It's like I said, the music's incredible. They reuse some of Larry Talbot's lines, the Wolfman, you know,
Right.
but he's got a completely new mission. He has no romantic interests. He is in a situation where he was supposedly dead in the Talbot Cemetery mausoleum, and some guys wanted to rob him of his jewelry, and they opened up the casket, and of course there was a full moon coming right in the window,
Yes.
and you know. He had wolfbane all over him, and that was to keep him dead. And
Right.
sure enough, the idiots took the wolfbane off, and then we're off to the races, right?
Yeah, we're off to a rousing start. You're absolutely right. And I think the transformation throughout there are more scenes with Lon Chaney as the beast, the wolf. And the transformations are really cool. The fight scenes are really neat. But unfortunately, poor Bela Lugosi gets stuck with the Frankenstein. And some people say he does a bad job, but he had a lot of challenges to overcome. And that,
Yeah.
I think, is important to note. And perhaps you could mention
Yeah.
probably the most important one.
Yeah, the most important one was he had a lot of his stuff sit on the cutting room floor. You know, the guy, he had, as people will know who follow the Frankenstein storyline, in the multiple movies, he got the power of speech. You know, he
Right.
was able to sooner or later start talking rather than just going, you know, no one could forget those immortal lines when Boris Karloff played him and he said, food good, fire bad. Right?
Well,
I still use that.
But unfortunately, in this movie, the lines, the dialogue, didn't go over as well. In fact, it all of a sudden became a comedy. And their preview movie was a bomb. I mean, it was really bad. So how do they handle it? Well, you can cut some of the stuff out. Maybe you have to redo a few things. And then what did they do? They actually left one scene in where they just took the volume. They just took
the
volume
took the
out.
Audio out. Yeah, they took his lines out. Yeah, but you can see his lips move. He's trying to talk. It's a little sad, but bear in mind, this is a Wolfman movie, really. It's supposed to be a mashup of the two of them, and they're sensationalizing it a little bit and all that good stuff. But, you know, bottom line, this was a good movie. You know, I thought it was great. I mean, there's a lot here to love, a lot to like. And I thought, in defense of Bela Lugosi, I thought he did a fine job. And and Larry Talbot had a lot more on-screen time, I thought, you know, as the Wolfman. And he did a great job. They had good stunt doubles in there for the two guys fighting.
Yeah.
And, you know, they leave just enough to to the imagination at the end where you think there could be a sequel. And there was the usual villagers bent out of shape. There's the heir of the Dr. Frankenstein, his daughter, who hooks up with this doctor who's trying to help Larry Talbot die. And, you know, all this stuff. Because Larry Talbot just wants to check out. He's not going to hook up. He's not going to hook up with any ladies because he wants out. He wants out.
But Larry runs into a problem because you see the scientist, the doctor, all of a sudden turns and decides to keep Frankenstein alive and kind of leave things hanging with respect to the Wolfman.
Wolfman, yeah.
Yeah, so it gets a little
bad
scary.
Bad stuff.
I want to mention one other person. That's Lyon Attwell. This is the movie, an actor's name. He plays the mayor in this movie, has a fairly good supporting role, but you'll probably remember him more from The Son of Frankenstein. So tell a little bit about what happened in The Son of Frankenstein, what he played in that movie.
Yeah, he was the inspector in The Son of Frankenstein, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the...
And he made such an impression that he ended up being the inspector in Young Frankenstein, which is a spoof of all the Frankenstein movies, which I thought was my favorite monster movie, by the way.
And you notice right away that this guy was handicapped in one special way.
Yes, he did. He was missing an arm. The monster tore his arm off. He was a one-armed inspector who used his spare arm in Young Frankenstein to store his darts when he played darts. Stick them in his arm. we're having too much fun. We're gonna have to
I think so we did this movie and we were going to actually do a little bit about the Abbott Costello Meets Frankenstein, but we decided this one we'll save the other one for another day, but work on that maybe next week. All good.
All right, sir.
Hey,
yeah, we got other fish to fry. We got a word, my friend.
Ooh, do we have a word? Our word is nuclear family. And the definition of this word, and this is kind of weird because when I saw it, I didn't really know what it meant. A nuclear family is a social unit composed of two parents and one or more children. Now, you look at nuclear and say, well, what does that have to do with nuclear? Well, it actually has more to do with nucleus. This is a word that was first used in the 20s. So it's way before the atomic bomb and nuclear, you know, implications. And so as a result, you think of a nucleus, you think of a core, the husband, wife, or the core. And the pieces that come off of the core are the children. And that's the way we come up with a nuclear family.
Yeah.
So, but
good
the
definition,
thing is,
John.
Yeah. The example I have, and it was many rights and benefits accrue to married couples, including health insurance, etc. Yet less than 18% of American adults today actually fit living into a nuclear family, because we know right now that there's a variety of ways in which a nuclear family just isn't out there. And it might be divorce, it might be separation, this and that, or whatever. Maybe they don't have kids. There's a lot of couples.
Cancer, a lot of things.
A lot of things can happen. So we ran into this when we were taking a look at our two takes. And so we're not going to be mentioning nuclear family. We're going to be mentioning non-nuclear family.
You know, I get mixed up with words sometimes, and I have a hard time remembering all this, so I appreciate the definition. Sure how mixed up I am. I thought Lionel Attwell was involved in the train business, the model train business. You know, Lionel model. That's how stupid I was when I was a kid. So I appreciate these definitions, John, and the kind of detail we get into in this stuff. But this two takes we're doing right now, the Peter Falk Law. Now, people go, wait a minute, you guys are jumping all over the place. How do you get from atomic energy to Columbo, you know?
Yeah.
Well, take us there, John. Give us the background.
Quickly, the background is that I was watching Columbo. I saw this actress in one of the later episodes, and I'd never seen her before. And I looked her up and found out that she was in more Columbo episodes, six of them, than any other actress. So, sure enough, I found out why. She was Peter Falk's second wife. And did a little more reading, and all of a sudden I find this thing called the Peter Falk Law. So I said, wow, this is kind of interesting. Let's find out. Well, here's the setup for this. And again, this is the non-nuclear family. We're talking about the situation in which we have a second marriage. There's a divorce and a second marriage in which there's some age disparity between the spouses. And as a result of that, there's the possibility of conflict between the children of the first marriage and the younger spouse of the second one. In this case, it's Peter Falk's new wife. And as those conflicts, they can be, and we're not trying to take sides here, because look, both sides, whether it be the new wife or the kids from the previous marriage, both, I'm sure, have arguments to go either direction with respect to the contention that exists. But in Peter Falk's case, his daughter, Catherine Falk, had a pretty good relationship through most of the years of it, although it was a tense time she had with the new wife. But all of a sudden, Peter Falk in 2008, he gets dementia, and communication stops right away. The new wife is not letting Catherine Falk, the daughter, see her father. And so what Catherine did is she decided to go file a petition, this and that, whatever. It was so contentious. I mean, she went through a whole expensive court situation in terms of money, time, etc. And when it's all said and done, the judge, you know, said, okay, the conservator is, you know, the new wife, but you will have the right to see him. But guess what? It blows up because nobody's enforcing it. So,
right.
What the end result is that Catherine Falk has no chance to see him in the hospital when he goes in and later dies, doesn't get notification of his death, and doesn't.
Or his funeral.
His funeral. And she finds out by social media that her father has passed away. So this was such
a hurt.
Yeah. So the injustice that she suffered were so big that it inspired her to create the Peter Falk Law. And so the bill, what it does, it provides the language provides so that the conservator is required to notify parents and children of the person, the conservatee, when they enter a hospital or when the person dies and funeral arrangements, et cetera. And also, when there's a situation where there's maybe not an official conservator, they're required to do a certain procedure also. But, you know, stating a law and getting a law passed, that's the bigger challenge. I mean, you can write the law. So what Catherine decided to do was she got a group of comparable people, and some of them having famous fathers or mothers, and decided to get a sounding board out to the social media. It was called, her organization with a website, it's called the Catherine Falk Organization. It's not a 501c3. They are all volunteers at work. And you could provide them with some money in order to help them maintain their website, et cetera. But what they've done is, number one, they've gotten the word out what's happened. And this is all about from 2012 on. Plus, there's another organization involved here, and that organization is called the let's see, I've got it written down here. Well, its acronym is NASGA, and it has to do with the National Association of Abuse. And so this organization is a 501c3, and what Catherine's decided to do is to create some of her people have been liaison committees. And they're responsible for trying to get the passage. Now, the last thing I got to say is that this is challenging for two reasons. Number one, you're dealing with state law. And because it's state law, you have to then get this passed in 50 different states. Now, that's a pretty daunting task. But number two, there's probably a law already dealing with some of this on the books. So what are you going to do? Are you coming up with a new law? Adjusting the old law, you are asserting an amendment to it. Well, this sounds like a job for a lawyer. And there's actually an organization that's been in existence since 1892 that takes upon this kind of problem, where what they do is they create the model law that then they can give to the various states and say, here's something to work with so that we have some uniformity. And so Catherine Falk and her team of that she's organized are working to do this. And what's the bottom end result? Well, the end result is they've gotten 11 states to get the Peter Falk Law inserted within a bigger law, because the law that is on the books not only includes this very specific situation, but it includes what I would call the Britney Spears situation too. It's got all the stuff in there with respect to that conservator and the relationship that should exist. And right now, working its way through the legislative process is happening in 20 other states. So they're moving along with respect to it, but it's interesting that how you fall into these things. I just watched Columbo, and before you know it, I'm off to the races on the internet, and that's what I came up with.
Wow, that's very good, John. A lot of people like this story when they hear it, because it's you know, I like how even-handed you were about both families and everything, but you know, I'm a little biased in favor of poor old Catherine. I think she got a rough deal there.
She did, and I'm glad that, and this is something, because of things such as when you have that age disparity, and we know that dementia is out there, it can happen, and that's what happened to Peter Falk, and that's the classic example, and it's just happening way too much that it has to be addressed.
Yeah, and it was. Whew. Okay, how about some groaners, buddy?
Well, I got a couple groaners here. Let's start with, I'm going to give you a Frankenstein groaner, okay? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is Frankenstein's favorite cheese? What is Frankenstein's favorite cheese? Think of the various kinds of cheese. Various kinds.
Well, I just went right away to Limburger. I don't know why.
Well,
but that's not it. It can't be that.
It's Munster cheese.
Oh, of course it is. Yes. Okay. Thank you, John. Very good. Okay, I'm ready for another. I'm ready. I'll try to get this.
Are you ready for a werewolf groaner?
Oh, my God. Okay. Go ahead.
What is a werewolf's favorite liquor? What is a werewolf's favorite liquor?
Bloody Mary? No, that's a drink. That's
Dracula.
Not a
that'd be Dracula. That would also be more for Dracula. When you think about the things we've talked about with respect to werewolves and what is important, this will make sense.
I'm sorry. I got nothing.
Moonshine.
Oh, of course. Of course. Is there moon called? Yes, a moonstruck. Yes. Yes, moonshine.
Hey.
Oh. All right.
Oh, well. But you learned something.
I did.
All good. Okay. Out of here.
A one and all and sing a song. Parola, parolin.
Parola, parolin.
For life is short, but death is long. Parola, parolin.
Parola, parolin.
There'll be no music in the tomb, so sing with joy and down with gloom. Tonight the new wine is in bloom. Paro, paro, paro.